All right, Dad, whenever you're ready.
We're back, motherfuckers, and it's another episode of the Weeze Family Circus brought to you by our friends at Clark Peschen. Tell what they do. They do the best family law divorce.
But they also are experts in estate planning. So a will is not enough. They are experts. They have free seminars every other Wednesday at noon and at 4 that you could sign up for free at WeezeFamilyCircus.com, and there's a link there. And if there's a QR code on the screen, you can use that too.
But or at ClarkPeschen.com/Weeze. All right, here's the deal, guys. This is a show that I've been looking forward to for a week or two. In a few minutes, we're going to be bringing in Susan Ashline.
This could be the first book of the Weeze podcast book club. This could be the first book that you tell people to read.
I got a lot of books I already did, but this book, here's the deal. As soon as we get Susan on, I have the book right here, and I took notes as I read it. And I couldn't wait to tell it all. Doreen talked to Susan today and told her I was going to tell everything.
Hold on. You need to clear your chest.
I know. He brought wine instead of water.
What's that got to do?
Because you sound like you have a horse in your throat right now.
He's a little under the weather. You're under the weather, so your voice is going.
My voice sucks anyway.
I know, but he thinks if take a drink of wine.
Oh, my God.
I didn't realize that this was was the way he sounded.
I have
right
a
now.
Bad voice. Leave it go.
Drink a sip of wine.
Oh, God damn this shit.
Sorry, I thought it sounded like you had a frog in your throat.
It's because he's sick. He's a little sick.
I did not know he was sick. I'm sorry.
Leave it all in. Leave it. Look at the crap I have to go through, everybody. Anyway, Susan Ashline will be coming up.
Wait, you were saying how you wanted originally, Weeze originally wanted to basically make this be an episode of Dateline NBC or 2020, 48 Hours, all the shows I watch. And he was going to do the whole story. And I was like, I don't think you should. And then when I talked to Susan today, I told her, she goes, oh, no, we're not doing that.
But in my mind, all the stuff that I'm dying to tell people will make them, I think it'll make them want to read the book.
Well, no, not if you tell everything. It's like a girl being naked on their first date. You got to leave the guy wondering a little bit. You got to leave people wondering what else is under those outfits.
All right.
And
before we get Susan on, I guess these guys, you got something important going on, Jake?
Yeah, I'm trying to get you captions while you're talking, I'm not just sitting here.
If you can make it so he could, we can bring Susan in and then we can start.
Well, we will if you're ready, but we can do that as part. We're not just going to when you're ready, I'll bring her on, but ignore, until we have multiple monitors, while I'm doing things on your screen, you have to ignore me.
I know, but you're covering Susan. That's all. If you could.
I know. Okay. If as soon as we were ready to bring her on, I was going to move it.
Oh, okay. Well, Dad didn't want to do pre-talk. He wanted to do it after. So
pre-talk. Go ahead. What do you got? What do you have?
I got stuff.
Well, let's hear it. Pre-talk. Pre-talk.
But no, we could do it after. It's fine because we don't want to leave.
We don't want to leave her hanging. Time. That's right. Forget the captions for today. He can hear her.
That's what I said from the beginning. But I want to bring in Susan. I can't see her, will I?
You will.
Introduce her and I'll bring her in.
Susan Ashline, here's the deal. We get a lot of packages at the apartment building, like everybody. But these days, everybody buying crap online. I get a package one day. I go down, pick it up. I don't know what this is. Uh-oh. It's another Susan Ashline book.
He was so happy.
The Shocking Journey of a Killer and Escape Artist, Ungrateful Bastard.
Show the cover and the camera.
Where's the camera?
You don't have to.
Yeah. Right here. Susan, you don't care if I show the book, do you?
Please do. Can I explain something though? So how you got this was when you were unceremoniously retired, I sent you a text and I said, I have a book coming out and I'm going to give you a nice beach read for your retirement. Aww. So I don't want people to think that I'm like going to you for publicity, because I had no idea you were going to do this podcast, but I'm so excited that you're doing it. And watching y'all chew at each other while my mic was off, I felt like part of the Wee's family's family. Like I felt like I was at your Thanksgiving dinner and you're all picking at each other.
All right, Susan. Listen, you know I'm a fan, a big fan. I've read the first two books. Let me bring those up first. The first one I was crazy about the cult. What's the name of the book?
Without a Prayer.
Without a Prayer.
It's now what? The basis of two Hulu docuseries.
Really? That book is phenomenal. The next book about that bad boy that, correct me if I'm wrong, did you have a relationship?
Right. Unfortunately, yes.
So this
A Jacket Off the Gourd.
Jacket Off the Gourd.
Great book. But here's what freaked me out. She had a relationship. He must have been a handsome son of a bitch. Something. But this book.
Oh, my God.
I have to say to you, Susan, before you tell us what we're allowed to say, I was afraid you were going to have a relationship with this guy.
Oh, God. What? What? Why? Let's revisit A Jacket Off the Gourd. This was a guy who happened to have been in prison, that guy, that ex-boyfriend, and I had no idea. And had I known, I never would have gone out with the guy in the first place. That's completely, I mean, oh, I don't even know where to go with that. Would you just forget that?
I think Wee's got your...
He has no idea what he's talking... Like, sometimes he just makes the most outlandish assumptions. Wait, you just have to, like, forget about
people
it.
People have a type. He thought your type was prison guys.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, God. No.
So,
no.
So let me just say, ungrateful bastard, this goddamn book, and one of my favorite things that you said here, Susan, this book, so much shit that this guy did, Woody, so much stuff he did in jail.
Wait, but... Can you show on the camera? He took notes, Susan, like he was in school. He's got notes that he took.
I love it.
As he was reading the book.
Can you see him?
I love it. I feel like I want to have a one-on-one book club with him. But we got to make this interesting for people who don't read books, because a lot of people don't. We need to turn them into readers. Let's give the lowdown of what the actual story is.
Can this also be bought as an audiobook for people or not yet?
There's no audiobook on it yet. And I do want to say, Wee's, I heard him say that the book is only available online. And I just kind of wanted to address that really quickly, because when I heard that, I went, ouch, because it makes it sound like I'm just writing books and uploading them. No, I'm a legitimate author with an agent, and we got a book deal with Bloomsbury, which is a really prestigious, massive global publisher. This is Bloomsbury's academic arm. So the way they distribute the books is differently. And in this case, they don't offer bookstores deep discounts on the book. So while bookstores can buy them and stock them, they typically choose not to, because they don't get them at that deep discount. So, I'm sure it is in stores, but it's just not like the normal big reach and distribution that they have. So the best way to get it is just to Google the title, and it's all over online.
Ungrateful bastard. So let me just say, being that you told Doreen that you don't want me to say everything, what I really appreciated that you wrote was so much shit this guy happened to this guy.
Yeah.
So it was like, are you kidding me?
I know. He was freaking out. He would finish reading for the, you know, that day, and he would be blown away and start telling me stuff.
Anyway, near the end of the book, you do a great thing by saying, you can't be sure Because he got, she got, obviously.
Well, don't spoil anything.
What the fuck? Well, what can I say anything?
I don't know. When someone says near the end of the book, that's usually where the spoilers are.
Christ. This is, you got me now. At this point, I can't say anything.
Well, let her tell the story.
No, you can. The end is just a recap, and I think I know where you were going with this.
I think you do, too.
When he first approached...
Go ahead.
What's that?
I think
when
you first, know.
When this, the killer had somebody, a third party, reach out to me to tell his story. And I, this was in 2019. And then after I did the interviews with him, one of the reasons I put the story aside for years. And one of the reasons was because everything, like we said, just sounded so crazy. I thought that you, this guy is not believable. But the thing is, and this is how I wrap it up at the end. I talk about that because over the time, I didn't have any communication with him, but I was still researching his claims. And over the years, one by one, these crazy claims turned out to be actually true. So then I went forward and I was able to corroborate and support a lot of what he was saying. So then I did complete the book.
Wow.
So let me ask a question, because I'm a fan of true crime, like stories in investigations. Like we're in the beginning, we don't know who did it. Let's find out who did it. And we're going to find all the answers along the way. And then there's some really cool stories that are just like, this guy was a crazy criminal. Here's a great story about him. What kind of true crime is this? Like, are we just going to learn about this guy, or are we going to get into an investigation at all?
It's number two of what you said. It's actually, I call it true crime, but it's criminal biography. So it's the story of his life from birth to present. And it covers his crime, but not like a Dateline episode would focus on the crime. Should you want me to talk about what the story is about? Because people are hearing this and they don't even know like the basics of the story.
Well, let me say, if you don't mind, this I hope I can say this. This guy murdered his mother and father. You could take it from, that's not giving anything away, right?
No.
There's two parts of the book. And so right. In the first part, this is this kid's upbringing, and he has this horrible upbringing isolated on a rural farm in Richfield, the town of Richfield, outside of Utica, about a half hour. And all these crazy things happen in his upbringing. He ultimately kills both of his parents. And it's around the time where the Menendez murders happened. Well, he flees to Texas with his then 14-year-old girlfriend. Oy. Their Interpol gets involved. There's an international manhunt. He's featured on America's Most Wanted, and a tip comes in, and that's how they catch the guy. So that's part one. You know, the town had been living in fear. They finally bring him in. He's a big spectacle. He goes to prison. We think we've heard the end of him. Well, while he's in prison, he learns to manipulate the guards, and he gets away with all sorts of things. And then he creates this bizarre plan to escape Auburn maximum security prison in what he calls a coffin. And then he's sent to solitary confinement for that. And then when he gets out, he spills and his story blows up internationally. So he made international news in 2017 for this mad escape plan.
So, but there's, I got, that's just one basic thing. What this dude does in prison, those are, and you checked a lot of it. You couldn't be sure of all of it, but you talked to other of the guys in the joint, didn't you?
Yeah, one of the reasons I held off on the story was a lot of his allegations could be corroborated by inmates who worked with him in prison, and they were all these notorious murderers all working together. Well, as it turns out, in like 2023, I think it was, one of them was released. Nobody wants to talk while they're in prison because there can be serious repercussions. This murderer was released, and I tracked him down, and he verified a whole bunch of stuff. But Weez, you say, well, a lot of the stuff you can't tell is true. I really nailed down almost everything. And this guy was in public for the first time like a week ago. And in his hearing in court, there was even more corroboration that was brought up during the hearing. So there are 20 pages of citations and endnotes. And I recommend that as people read along, they read the endnotes because I think they're more interesting than the book.
Why was he in court recently?
Yeah, so he has a – so it's running parallel with the Menendez case in that he has what's called a 440 motion, which we can call an appeal. It's not really an appeal. But – so you can waive your rights to an appeal, but you can never waive your rights to your constitutional rights. So he's claiming a constitutional violation. He's claiming ineffective assistance of counsel. So what they did was they brought to the hearings, first time he's been seen in public in 30 years, they brought in his three former capital defenders for when we had the death penalty from 30 years ago. And they sat on the witness stand and they had to talk about his allegation that he was offered a bribe of $10,000 through his parents' estates to plead guilty, and he would plead guilty, he would be spared the death penalty, but on the condition he also waived his rights to an inheritance. The allegation is not only were his attorneys aware of this bribe, they encouraged him to take it and then allegedly encouraged him to deny it during sentencing, to not bring up the payment at all. So that's a big part of the issue that he's raising.
Oh, you were telling me about that.
So, Yeah. So did you say they were in court recently with that lawyer, that the one he wanted to kill?
Yes. That guy was in court. And Woody, his name is the Gordon Maurer is the name of the killer who's the subject of my book, and his nickname's Woody. So Woody's got a new attorney for this 440 motion, and his attorney is the same attorney who handled the 440 motion of somebody named Caitlin Connolly. If you recognize that name, she was in Dateline. I think she murdered her boyfriend's mother, poisoned her, well, allegedly, because actually Woody's attorney had gotten this Caitlin Connolly's conviction overturned, which is what she's trying to do with Woody's case.
Listen, if I ask you a question and you don't want people to hear it, Jake will cut it, okay? I got it.
Okay, yeah.
Do you think his mother molested him?
No question. Do you think that I presented enough evidence in the book? You know, you can never verify something like that unless you walk in and catch somebody in the act, right? I feel like I verified that as close as anyone possibly could.
You hear me?
You said that to me. He said, I think, you know, that's what he told me that he thought.
Man, oh man. Another thing I want to say is, I don't know how to say it, but the way you write the book, he seems like he could be a good guy.
I'm shocked that you would say that because I thought people reading the book would absolutely hate him. I mean, he's harsh. He's got something to say against basically every race and ethnicity. He has got really harsh things to say. But everybody who's reading the book, I'm getting private messages saying that they feel so badly for the guy. And I'm really surprised that that's the outcome.
Well, that's Wheeze because he has so much empathy for people. And it doesn't surprise me at all that he's like, I've had a lot of history with Wheeze feeling that same way about other not so good people.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I'm really interested in psychology and I'm wondering if why he felt that way is because he feels that he is the way he is because of how he was brought up. And I didn't read the book, but if there's stories that you read where people are turn out to be horrible people, but if you really look into their history and you see how they were brought up, it all points back to things and childhood trauma is real and it makes us who we are as adults. And sometimes that becomes a murderer, unfortunately.
If he just murdered, if he just murdered his mother, that would be something. But his father was a, supposedly a good guy and good to him. Am I wrong, Susan?
He loved his father, but there were issues with his father as well. I sent you some audio. We can run. So throughout the book, I pull from the narrative to include some Q&A between us, but I also insert his own words throughout the narrative. Oh. And one of the Q&A that I pull out, I did send you some audio from him discussing shooting his parents, if you're able to run that.
I have that and I'll run that now.
You got it, Jake?
I won't actually run it now, but I will in the edit, yeah.
You can't run it?
Okay. I mean, do you want to hear it? I can.
Yeah, yeah. We want to hear it.
Yeah.
Here we go.
This Hold is, on, I get, give me a second.
This is Woody the Murderer. He murdered people in prison, too.
This real the more I'm hearing this story.
He didn't kill anyone in prison.
He didn't kill anyone in prison.
You don't want me to say that?
No, he didn't kill anybody. He did beat people up, though.
Wait a minute. Remember when the white guys gave him a shiv and wanted him to kill a child molester?
Just stab.
Stab, not kill.
Stab,
yeah. Just stab. He didn't die.
Okay.
All right. This is Woody clip one.
A beautiful letter. I could be a golden boy. I can manipulate the whole thing. I'm not. I've been in prison 24 years. Spent years in the box. I don't give a I am what I am. If I tell you, listen, I feel like taking Randy Sharp and snapping his neck. Can you put that in the book? Oh, well, and fine. That's exactly what I told you.
Ooh. Here's the second one. Unless you want, should we run them all back to back or?
I can't hear it, but I'm assuming you just ran the one where he's talking about I hit my dad, pop, pop, pop.
No. That was the one about Randy Sharp and how he wanted to kill him. That's his lawyer, maybe?
Yes.
Lucy, could you hear it?
Yeah, I could hear it.
That's weird.
Go ahead, Jake. Play the one where he tells about killing the parents.
Is that the 46-second one or the 18-second one?
46.
The complex I have is, I don't want to be viewed as they see a prisoner, they think like rapist or some it's like if everybody knows, look, I'm just a convicted killer, cool.
You don't want them to see you as a rapist.
Yeah, people see a prisoner, they automatically.
No, that's a comment I was doing Q&A when he was coming up for the hearing. That's about the hearing.
Okay.
Back, I clicked the light on, I shot four times. Pop, pop, pop. Then I came down the hallway and I heard a pitter-patter of her feet coming out of the bathroom. I saw her. She came into view like she was running for the door. I don't know. She thought I went outside and shot myself. I don't know what the question is, but she was going for the door. Got her hand a door, and I shot once, and it went through her head.
There you go. Wow. Anyway.
Wow.
Anyway, I have to also say, Susan, I just wish I could have seen a picture of that 14-year-old girl he ran away with.
Yeah, well, maybe I can send you the newspaper shot of it from back in the day, and I don't know if Jake can put it on or not, but she looks evil in the picture. She looks very dark.
No kidding.
How old was he at the time? She was 14. How old was he?
18. Oh. 18, and she was 14.
Can I bring up Sabrina? Never mind.
One's kind of a spoiler.
Yeah, don't do it then.
But
I just wanted to say, in relation to the audio that we heard, you know, I did these interviews with him, and he's so cold and he's so harsh, and that's what I was hearing. We did 14 hours of conversations. So when I'm writing the book and I'm inserting all that, I'm working really objectively. I'm not reading that in the way that everybody else is reading that. So you're able to read that. It's all put together, and you're feeling these emotions and sympathy and empathy for him. I don't feel that when I'm writing it. It's just, raw, hard data, basically, that I'm putting in. So that's why I was surprised that so many people are feeling sympathetic for him.
Can I ask you, Did you verify any of the really miserable things he talked about that happened in jail, like drinking out of the toilet?
So a lot of those parts, talking and generally speaking generally about those sorts of things that happen in prison, they're easy to verify just from looking at data from different sources, that watchdog groups and such that monitor prison. So that's something I'm not surprised about. As far as incidents where he's talking about assaulting people, I think those were all verified. I mean, he even talks about how he was made to go fix a lock on a cell and there was a guy there hanging. And, you know, he's giving me these details from prison. You know, he doesn't know the guy's name, but he's giving me all these details and dates and information. And sure enough, I was able to find the information that there actually was a guy hanging there dead. And it was like hours and hours before any guard had even found this guy dead. Because they just weren't doing their rounds.
I don't know if you'll remember putting this in the book because it wasn't a big part, but one of our best friends is Joe Comfort, the King. You got Joe.
Wait, what?
Not this guy.
Wait, you know him?
No, not this one.
Okay.
I'm wondering, he might be related.
Could be.
Who was that guy, Joe Comfort? Do you remember?
Yeah, him and his brother, Larry Comfort, I think, was the guy. They were running drugs, and then they ended up shooting at cops, and they killed at least one of the cops.
Oh, wow.
Joe Comfort, I think that inmate has since died.
People hear this will think we're talking about the King, but no, it's somebody else named Joe Comfort.
I find it funny, yeah. Like it is very reminiscent of the Menendez brother case, and you said it was around the same time because they are saying they were molested by their dad, and you know after the fact they said, and that's why they said they killed them. And their mom didn't.
It's very
them.
Similar.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's very, very similar, running parallel. Again, they both have 440 motions filed around the same time. And when Woody was picked up from Texas, he was in jail watching the retrial of the Menendez brothers. But he also, when he was in Auburn, he was listening to you. He's been called. Yeah, I don't hear from him by any stretch on any, regular means, but he has been contacting me recently because of the book launch and wants to find out about that. And he's, are you doing any publicity? I said, actually, tomorrow I'm going to be on the Wheeze family circus. And he's like, what, Wheeze? I said, Wease. And he goes, oh, brother Wheeze? I said, yeah, how do you know? He's like, we listened to that in Auburn.
Oh, yeah. We would
he
get.
He might have been building his escape coffin while listening, getting motivation from your show.
That's funny.
Well, I had a good friend in Attica. Unfortunately, he's dead now.
Right.
But man, if Tom Torpy was still living, he had to know this douchebag.
And we've gotten over the years. Wheeze has gotten multiple letters from people in prison, but many different letters from different inmates. And Bobby Lucy just said her boyfriend, Adam, he has relatives that worked at that prison.
Which one, Auburn?
Really?
Yeah, four of his uncles.
I visited.
Four of his uncles?
Yeah.
Four of Adam's uncles worked at that prison, Bob.
For how long, you know? Long? They long. Know Woody. Find out if he knows Woody.
I bet you they do know him.
Everybody knows him because of his escape plan.
Right. That's interesting.
Everybody knows of him.
There was a picture in the book, right? Because you showed me a picture. Yeah.
The other thing, I don't think this is giving that much away. I'm not. But I think this will titillate people to want to read the book.
A little foreplay. A little foreplay.
Woody got a lot of pussy in the joint.
Oh, yeah, he told me that, too.
Now, I won't go into detail, but you got to admit, how much of that do you think was true, or do you know it was true?
I mean, I again, that's something you couldn't know unless you actually walked in on it. But I think there's enough circumstantial evidence to put that together and say, yeah, it does happen. It does happen. And it happened. That's how you remember the escape in 2015 from Dannemora. Those two guys were on the run. And everybody was living in fear. Part of the reason they were able to escape is because they were having sexual relations with a civilian who was working there.
Right.
It happens.
This isn't giving anything away, but this I learned from Susan Ashline's book, Attica.
Attica.
Where he was, is the second highest in the nation for sex with other people in the joint.
Oh, really?
You got him reading it.
For sexual abuse. But that was at the time where he was making his allegations in that year.
Wait a minute. I love this. I have to say this. She said sexual abuse.
No, I think she means the people that are in the prison. And you were talking about, he was saying that it's the prison that has the highest rate of having, being able to be an inmate and have sex with people.
But here, go ahead,
it's called sexual abuse because legally it's sexual abuse if a guard is having sexual relations with an inmate, regardless if it's male, female, like a male guard, female inmate, female guard, male inmate.
I was just going to ask because when he says it's the most, it's the most sex in prison, is that like consensual? Don't they have a lot of, what do they call those visits?
Yeah.
Conjugal.
Yeah.
No. It's reported. So it was self-reported and it was reported as sexual abuse within the frame of the law that says a guard having any physical contact with an inmate is considered sexual abuse. So if you're the inmate, it's self-reported. If you're filling out that form, you're going to say, oh yeah, you know, CO Daisy touched me the other day, and you're going to check that off. But they were second in the nation for sexual abuse at the time that Woody was making his allegations.
So let me give you my favorite quote from Susan's book. You ready?
Ready.
Sexual abuse, she explained it. Woody said, yeah, sexual abuse, if her sitting on my face is abuse, then yes, I'm a victim. Awesome. Quote. Awesome. Oh. Which I've always talked about.
Right.
You know, whenever like a school teacher gets busted for bagging a 16-year-old boy, come on, man. The kid loved it.
Oh, my God.
Abuse.
Please don't say that. That's not true.
There's such a double standard.
It's true.
It's not
a child.
True.
That's a whole other topic.
If you said 18.
No, it's not true.
And the teacher was like 21.
Yeah.
Different story.
That's just that. Literally, Susan, when he was reading the book, I think he was jealous. He was like, he got a lot of action there. I felt like I wasn't keeping up enough at home that he wanted to go to prison to get some more action.
Why would you say something that ridiculous?
You did.
No.
Kept bringing it up to me. So I finally said, I got to see this guy.
You started off the top of the show saying something ridiculous about me, that you thought I was going to have a relationship with this murderer. That's so offensive. So if you're going to call her out for ridiculousness, then I need to call you out.
Two things. Number one, I know what happened. Can we talk about when you finally sat down with Woody? Were you were afraid of him, right? Scary.
So, I'm not a person who's afraid of things, too, but I was so terrified of him. Do you want me to tell that story?
Yeah.
If you don't mind.
It was in the summer. Yeah, no, it was in the summer, and you can't wear shorts even in the prison, so I had long pants on. It was 93 degrees, so it was hot out already, but there's no air conditioning in there. And I had gone to see him. I didn't tell him that I was coming because I wanted to respectfully meet him and let him know my agent was going to send this book out to publishers. I hadn't had contact with him in, like, years, and I also wanted to get a feeling for his presence. So I couldn't sleep the night before because I was so nervous. But I go to the prison. I'm wearing long pants, 93 degrees. I walk in there and I start like sweating because I become so terrified. I have to wait for him. And I'm just watching the clock tick, tick. And I'm sweating. And I asked the guard, like, could I have some ice? And I was pretending it was just the heat bothering me. But I was just so nervous because... he had talked about how he was going to lure his former defense attorney to a visit and he was going to jump the table, beat him to death
yep.
on the visiting room floor.
Yep.
Oh.
And what they do is they sit you in a room, it's open, and the tables just look just like a school cafeteria. And they released him into the room. There's two guards behind me, far enough behind me where they could never get to me if he jumped the table. And they're behind plexiglass. One of them's laying back with his eyes closed, so he's asleep. And then I hear this kunk kunk, and I look up, and there's Woody.
Oh.
They release him into the room. They don't come in with him. They just release him and lock the door behind him. So now it's just him and me. And he's walking. I look up, not realizing he doesn't know who I am. And... I'm normally like a really bubbly, energetic personality. So I look up and I big smile and he's just blank.
Wow.
He looks just scary. Wow. And he's just walking to me and he's just eyeballing me. He doesn't take his eyes off me. So I smile again. Nothing. It's kind of like when you're holding the baby over your shoulder and the baby smiles at some grumpy old man behind him and the man doesn't smile back. So the baby's face falls because they're just confused. And that was my face. Like, what's going on here? So not to be deterred, when he gets closer, I'm like, idiot, wave the smile.
There he is.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So he just doesn't look as big there, but his presence was terrifying. And this was at the peak of when he was conditioning himself for the escape.
Wow. So when he walked after he walked in the room, what were you gonna say, Lou?
So go ahead.
Sorry. Adam just told me that two of his uncles were working the day he tried to escape.
Oh, wow.
Susan, you might have to talk to them.
Yeah,
to get them on.
Stuff went down.
Holy.
So he comes over to the table. And I stand up to shake his hand. He still doesn't take his eyes off me, and he looks absolutely miserable. And he sits down, and I say, are you mad that I'm here? And he says, no. Do I look mad? And I go, yes. Yes, you do. You do. And then I'm like super nervous, and I'm stammering, and I don't know what to say. And then I'm really proud of the title of the book. So I said,
oh, yeah.
I've got a great title of the book.
Yeah.
Am I giving too much away, Doreen?
No, I want to hear this. You got me dying right now.
I said, I've got a great title for the book. And I'm smiling. I'm really proud of myself. And he's just got his arms folded and there's no expression. I go, do you want to know what it is? Sure. I said, ungrateful bastard. Nothing.
I would have been scared.
Now there's dead silence.
Can I come in?
Well, I want to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because she knows that I know why it's called Ungrateful Bastard.
But maybe we shouldn't tell that.
What do you think?
No, we can tell because I thought that he would immediately see I thought that Woody would instantly get the connection. Well, apparently he did, but he was still non-reactive. So I said to him, I was very nervous. Now, at this point, I thought, I really pissed him off. Like, this is the point where he jumps the table and I get my head crushed. So I said, do you know why? And he says, the nickname my mother gave me. Now there's dead silence and I'm like, gulp. And then all of a sudden he straightens himself and he throws his head back and he laughs and he goes, that is a great title. I like it.
That's what it,
so that must have been the point where you started getting turned on by him when he was.
Hey, she, stop it. Why, no, she's fucking.
I'm joking. I'm joking.
Wait, Susan,
it's called a callback. It's a callback to him saying that you.
No. Well, I keep getting shit on. I didn't ever think. I only because of the other book. You know, from because of the book on the gorge that you were with the guy. And this kid, in certain areas.
Right.
Seemed like he could be a good person.
Because he was getting a lot of action and.
Yeah, well, of course.
I didn't get that. When I interviewed him, I thought he was terrifying.
Oh.
And when I went to meet him in prison, I was terrified. I don't see how you're seeing that because I thought he was terrifying. And again, just for clarification, the guy that I met in A Jacket Off the Gorge, I met him in the wild. I had no idea he'd been in prison.
Right.
Okay, let me go back so I'm not a jerk. I only thought that a little bit, you know, early. Not once you sat down with him, I knew that there's no way. It was just a small thought. I didn't think. Plus, the fact that in the book it seemed like women were drawn to him.
Well, when he was first picked up when he was younger in Texas, you know, he had experienced that whole thing where women were writing to him from all over the world and visiting him. And it's, I cannot get that concept.
Yeah.
And he's actually, you read that he's one of those people who found a woman on the outside or a woman found him who fell in love with him. And she has been trying to work to get him freed. And another thing that psychologically I can't even fathom how that happens.
I think one of the Menendez brothers got married in prison, I'm pretty sure.
It happens, and I don't understand that.
By the way, if you read Ungrateful Bastard, the Menendez brothers could never hang out with this guy.
No.
This guy would beat the shit out of them. they're not as bad as he is, right? From what we know.
His prison record is really horrible.
Right.
We can run the sound now as far as Randy Scharf, because we've talked about one of the reasons I was so terrified to visit him. So he there's sound from him from our interview where he's talking about, you know, beating his former attorney, Randy Scharf, and I think it talks about him.
Jake, you got it?
All right. Yep.
The complex I have is, I mean, I don't want to be viewed as like a, you know, they see a prisoner, they think like rapist or some shit. You know, it's like, if everybody knows, like, I'm just a convicted killer, you know, cool.
You don't want them to see you as a rapist.
Yeah, people see a prisoner and they automatically think like some weird shit. I mean, look at me as a killer, you know what I mean? I'm fine with that, but, you know, a lot of times when I see civilians like that, that's what I don't. Listen, I'm not a good sex offender. I just killed somebody. And I mean, I got to stay in the court of the hospital and give, you know, the waiting room a speech. I feel better after that. Usually I tell the nurses the same thing. You know, they come in and it's like, look, you know, I just want to make the, you know, just for clear the air. I just want to be viewed as a killer that I am, not a good grief. So, the nurses are happy, I'm happy, everybody's more comfortable.
By the way, Susan.
That wasn't the Randy one. That was the one him. The Randy one was the first one you played, Jake.
What are you talking about?
That wasn't him talking about.
I can't hear it on my
end.
I can sit myself. I can write you a beautiful letter. I can be a golden boy. I can manipulate the whole thing. I'm not. I've been in prison 24 years. Spent years in the box. I don't give a. I am what I am. If I tell you, listen, I feel like taking Randy Sharp and snapping his neck. Can you put that in the book? Oh, well, it's fine. Because that's exactly what I told you.
Yeah.
Now, Susan, reading the book since we just heard, according to Woody, he was supposed to get this $10,000, and is that true, right, Susan? He thought he was supposed to get the $10,000. Didn't Randy say, "I'm going to send you the money"?
Yeah, the what they're calling the bribe money, the pay for plea, was supposed to be kept in a certain account by Randy Scharf.
Yeah.
He ended up, it came out in the testimony that he commingled it with his own funds, and he didn't even give Woody the money. It, you know, he gave him bit by bit over years, but he withheld a lot for a while, which is why he has so much anger, had so much anger for his previous attorney. But was when his attorney was on the stand a week and a half ago, Woody said he actually felt sorry for him because he's battling multiple illnesses and his behavior was wildly erratic.
Woody felt sorry for Randy Sharp?
Yes. Oh. Wow. Yeah.
I have a few questions. In the book, do we find out like what his motive was?
Motive for what,
to kill
bro?
His parents.
Yeah.
To kill his parents?
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole first part of the book kind of builds up to that, so I don't think I could really put that succinctly. But it's coupled with the abuse, and to cover the his feelings of anger from the abuse, he was drinking a lot of alcohol. And he also began taking a lot of steroids, way too many steroids, which back then, you know, road rage, that term road rage came into style. And then things came to a head. He'd started committing all of these crimes, a whole bunch of crimes, burning down a barn and robbing people. And his mom got him out on bail for that. And then he was going to skip town with his 14-year-old girlfriend. And that night, you know, the title of the chapter is Nobody Was Supposed to Get Killed. It just, things came to a head. Everything came together and he ended up shooting them.
Wow.
What was that little
and
girl?
How old again at this time when he?
He was 18. We have a picture of him too, if you want to put it up, from when he was nabbed at 18 years old, when he was finally caught from Texas. There's a mugshot that a sergeant was able to pull, a paper mugshot from 30 years ago, to show him at 18 years old.
What are these?
Those
Sorry.
Were all the planks of wood he was planting in the sawdust. And, you know, how did guards miss this? He was hauling this all around the complex and nobody was like, hey, what are you doing with that wood? What are you doing with that giant box you've built?
Wow.
You know?
So the first picture that you showed was with his dad. You can see the expression on the dad's face. So there's a section in the book that we've read where his dad began beating his grandmother.
Oh, I forgot.
There on the left.
I forgot.
Now I think this, and then Woody watched him and he wanted to impress dad. So they're both beating her with a wiffle bat. And I think this picture is interesting because the dad in the picture with the grandma, look at the expression on the dad's face.
Dad's a little scary.
Let me mention
he doesn't look like he's happy to be in the picture with the grandmother.
Let me mention that section of the book to me was so upsetting. They beat grandma terribly. They killed her a few times, didn't they think, Susan?
I thought so. She ended up surviving and going to a nursing home.
Yeah.
And, you know, as far as corroboration for stuff like that, I guess I would say, why would you admit stuff like that if you didn't do it? It's really horrible. But also, you know, I had access to his medical records that he had signed over to me, and I don't think he ever saw the connection. But it was interesting while he had told me that this had gone on during these dates. I noticed that in his medical records, he was complaining of stomach pains regularly. His mom was taking him to the emergency room, and they're like, yeah, there's nothing wrong with you. So what's going on behind closed doors? You know, nobody really knows.
Right. Could be something in his head, like being so upset about something.
So here's the deal, kids. Here's the book, Ungrateful Bastard. Maybe we'll see a movie. Can I say that?
Yeah, my agent is entertaining film interest right now.
He's excited. He's hoping it'll be a film. And where can we get the book?
If you just Google the title, you can get it anywhere. But if you want to get it in person from me, I'm doing a signing at Elvio's on Elvio's Coffee Shop in Webster.
Please,
on February 21st.
One of our best friends.
Oh my God. What's the date?
February 21st. Well, it's a Saturday from 9 to 11.
That's awesome.
I want to promote it more.
Could
you
put it in February?
What time, do you know?
She said
9 to 11. I didn't know the history of the coffee shop. I went with a bunch of people like a week ago, and I thought, this is just such a great place with a wonderful vibe. Oh. And it's a beautiful location, and there was a guy playing guitar. He was great, and the staff was just adorable. And I just reached out to them while I was there, and then I followed up, and they said, yeah, we'd love to have you do a signing here.
So you had no idea that the LVO was like, basically part of, you know, boys with the show?
I didn't know anything about it. And it was my first time there, like I said, and I was just really loved it. And that's when I Googled the place and I saw some backstory on it.
You can get some delicious Portuguese food.
Not only, Elvio's. Yeah, and Elvio was on Weeze's show many times. He would sit in when as a sit-in, but, you know, and then he blew up in Daughtry and stuff, so.
Still came.
Yeah.
Anyway, Susan, mention the other two books because I love them.
A Jacket Off the Gorge.
Great book.
And Without a Prayer.
That's my favorite.
And I'm featured in two Hulu docuseries that are based on Without a Prayer, Cult Justice and How I Escaped My Cult.
Oh, I saw. I didn't watch them. But I saw that on Hulu.
Really?
How I Escaped My Cult. Somewhere I saw it.
Is that from the book?
Yeah, it's all me. It's all based on the book. Cult Justice Episode 4 and How I Escaped My Cult. I think I'm episode 2 or 3.
Oh, I can't wait.
Well, what?
Yeah, we'll definitely watch. I'm excited.
Susan Ashline, everybody. Thank you, Susan. I'm your biggest fan.
Thank you.
And
I love it.
Well, Susan, we have a lot of listeners of the podcast that love animals, and I see some. Who is that next to you? Is that a doggy or a kitty?
A cat.
There's a cat.
Lucy's a cat girl.
I am.
Yeah.
Elvio.
I saw you with your dog, Doreen.
Yes.
Elvio.
So I told my cat it was okay.
Oh, we love cats.
What?
She's going to kill it at Elvio's. Jake will be there.
Yeah.
Maybe Lucy.
Ronan. Jake's little son, Ronan.
Elvio's
is his favorite place.
Thank you.
Are you guys going to come? He's volunteering.
We're in Florida. Those guys.
I know you are.
Lucy and Jake will be there.
I would go.
Yeah.
Lucy will be there.
Wait, what day is it?
Lucy, come. What's that?
What day is it on?
February 21st.
Put it down. 9 a.m. to 11.
Jake. Yeah, but I'm always late, so I'll probably be there at 9:01.
So anybody who wants to go, you can go meet Susan and Lucy.
And get the book.
Susan, when you hang up, or if you can leave your tab open for a minute until it says, like, it takes a second to finalize recording everything. So just leave it open for like 30 seconds to a minute.
Hang up?
I'll take care of all that.
Okay.
Bye, Susan.
Thank you so much, Susan.
Love the book.
Thank you.
Ungrateful bastard.
I thought that name was after you.
You're so stupid. Talk more shit. This book, I never heard anything like I see in this book.
No, you were very, every time that you were done reading it for that day, you would tell me all about it at dinner and stuff.
But we didn't tell half of what goes in the joint.
It was so funny when I called her this morning, and when I revealed that you want to do that, she's like, oh, no, no.
I didn't tell a whole bunch of stuff.
Well, I can't wait to read it, but I also, to hear that audio, it's too bad she can't find a way to like have the audiobook and include that audio that we get to hear. But I bet
she will.
Yeah.
You know that picture of him muscled up?
Yeah, yeah. Is that in prison? Yeah,
of course.
Oh.
He was a teenager when he went in. You know who he looks like to me?
Who?
nut man.
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. Dad's talking about my brother.
Happy birthday, nut man.
Yeah. Birthday today, actually.
Yeah, today's his birthday.
All right, I just want to mention one thing. You might have heard about it, but we're witnesses. You've heard about this. We're in South Florida. We have had 30-degree temperatures.
Definitely.
It's warmed up now. But the goddamn iguanas fell out of trees, frozen to death.
It's sad.
All over. I showed Doreen. I love this. Some people go, ooh, they look like dragons. They look scary. I love them.
No, I think
cool.
A lot of people love them until they own a home and try to have any kind of garden or any kind of plants.
Why? What do they do?
Because when you they are an invasive species. They were never meant to be here in Florida. It was all due to probably one jamoke brought it from wherever it came from.
No kidding.
And they've multiplied, and they hurt people's plants. They poop all over the place. You don't understand. Dad doesn't believe me, but here where we live at our condo, we pay this woman, and she's like the iguana hunter, and she comes with these spear guns, and she shoots them and kills
shut
them.
Shut up.
Shoots them out of the trees.
And you don't, why they got killed my...
One time I walked by, there was like four bleeding dead iguanas on the ground, piled up.
Turn your mic up a little.
I am calling for the cease of that.
No, you don't understand. You can't cease that. I
like them.
Okay. Because you don't own a home in Florida where they're all around you and doing damage, and that's what happens. So people here who don't like them, it's only visitors to Florida that go, oh, look at the iguana.
I'm not a visitor, and I like them.
I know, because you're
like
a visitor.
You're different. You don't count.
You're like a visitor. Because you don't...
I'm sure there's a lot of people who agree with Dad.
Thank you, honey.
I don't know.
It's my Lucy.
One time, I thought you were in the car with me, Lucy. We ran one over. Or maybe it was Abby. One of you.
I was in the car.
It was you.
Terrible.
Remember, we were all upset.
I was sick about it.
And remember the lady rolled down the window next to us and
said... Oh, yes. I remember that.
Don't worry about it. We don't want them
It was
here.
Terrible, though. Lucy was that.
What? I'm sorry to go into the iguana talk, but what harm do they do? What?
I know they harm the... like plants and vegetables and trees. They eat all that stuff. And
they gotta eat.
I know, but if you have a home and you pay a lot of money to have landscaping and then they eat it all, then they also poop all over the place. And
I saw the poop.
And they poop from the trees, so the poop... And one time, you guys, one time I was walking to the beach here, and you know how we have that trestle thing? Well, I thought it was raining, and it wasn't raining. It was peeing on my head. The iguana peed.
That's fabulous.
No, it is. You're nasty.
What's wrong with iguana pee? That's nothing.
Well, it's funny that you talk about the cold and how the iguanas froze and fall out of the tree, which they do, but then they come back to life. So when it warms up, they're not dead. They just look dead.
Then how come I saw... pickup truck loaded, taking them away, dead.
Because I think the guy is trying to save them from people. He brings them to another location so that cars don't run them over because they're really.
Are you
not
seeing this? Structural and property damage. There's environmental, public health. There's a list of all these things as to what.
Power outages.
The harm they cause.
Yeah, they do a lot of damage. They're not well liked by normal people here.
For audio people, it's infrastructure collapse, costly repairs, roof and attic damages, power outages.
Excuse me. Propaganda. You know when you go to Aruba or any of those, they're everywhere. Right. No one bugs them.
That's where they belong, in Aruba.
Okay.
Not in Florida.
All right, let me say we're recording this on the Monday after the Super Bowl. I'm not going to mention Bad Bunny to all you people that...
Let's talk about it.
No. I'm not going to mention Bad Bunny for people that, you know, they don't care about Epstein files, but they care about another American. And I'm not, I just want to talk about the game.
Okay.
We were all squeezing for
Seattle,
of course. But I actually thought, and I'll get killed for this, but I will debate it. I thought that Drake May was a way better quarterback than Darnold. I thought Darnold sucked. And before Jake mentions anything, you will look up the MVP of the Super Bowl, mostly quarterbacks, not this kid, you know, but Drake May, I thought the MVP should have been the defense of Seattle.
No, the kicker.
Oh, the kicker. He would keep kicking it down to the 1 or 2 yard line. That's a miracle.
Or even like at the beginning, you thought like when it was 9 or 12-0 that it was gonna like be, you know, the kicker was the only guy to score a point.
Yeah,
right. No, I agree.
You
want to
go? Okay.
You can go, Jake. What?
I was gonna say I agree with you. I think Sam. Let me just say I didn't really watch the game that much. I didn't even watch the commercials. I was just so busy, but I should have for this. I'm just so mad at football still, and like the Bills would have smoked.
No, you're wrong. Nope.
I think Dad's right because we don't have enough good enough O-line to protect Josh, so he has time.
What are you talking about?
Yes,
we do. O-line, we have phenomenal O-line.
Hold on, one at a time. Let me just say that. Defense of Seattle. I mean, I don't think Josh would have been sacked 7 times. Is that how many?
At least, I think.
Okay. I almost called him Mac Jones, but Drake May has the most career postseason sacks of any quarterback. So it's not just Seattle. It's every defense that he's played against in the playoffs. So the O-line is weak. The Bills do not have a weak O-line.
Okay, but Josh never had time. Come on, Bobby. Every time we watched the Bills game, Josh never had time.
I mean, there was injuries a few games. Deion was out. Spencer was out.
What do you mean he didn't have time? He never had a – there was a few games that where he was getting chased by when we played Cleveland and like – there was some games, yes, but
Jake,
like
he barely could throw a long pass because there was never enough time for.
No, there was no wide receivers.
Exactly, because we don't have any receivers, maybe. And we still
no one was open.
We still wouldn't have had any receivers, but we still would have had Josh Allen and Josh Allen or Drake May or whoever the running back is, and we have James Cook, and like between those two guys, you put those guys in the field plus just. The Bills as the Bills, they would have smoked that team.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
God.
Well, I don't know about smoked, but I do think they would win.
Well, the being that they didn't score a touchdown till when? Third quarter?
Fourth quarter, I think. I think it was the fourth.
Listen, yeah, you're judging like this whole time. The Patriots were frauds and they were exposed. Like, yes, they played a good defense. Yes, they've played good defenses this whole postseason, but they haven't put up fucking any numbers, and they haven't played anybody that's been that impressive for me and put up good enough numbers against a really good team for me to say, okay, you're a legit team. I'll take you seriously. They haven't done that more than one or time, two times, three times. The Bills do it. Consecutive games. So.
They did have the easiest schedule in the league.
You had told me. So I tell you, you didn't get to see it, Jake, but my favorite part as a Bills fan of the game, because the Patriots were getting killed. And then one play goes to Stephon Diggs, and the guy tackles him. He goes out of bounds, and then the guy pushes him long after he was out of bounds, a bad push. So Stephon gets up, gets in his face. So they start to fight. Who comes running over? Matt Collins. And so there's our two Bills fighting the Seahawks. They punch and grab, and they almost hit the ref. And that's after that, was when they the Patriots scored because they were so pumped up. That's when Matt Collins made those two catches.
Let me mention, if anyone, it's too late. Today in the New York Post, two, not one, two full pages on Matt.
Mac Collins.
Two full pages.
Oh, they were
about
showing
about him. Did you?
I saw the picture of what he was wearing because
I saved it for you.
He walks into the game wearing like a Fred Flintstone costume or
Buffalo
something.
I don't know why Buffalo let go of him because he's not that expensive. I think it was for and he's a really like good like who'd they replace him with Palmer? Like I don't or I don't even know. Like it's he's a great option for Josh, and he got
open. Was funny. He's great,
and he had heart. He cared when Stefan, when Stefan and that guy started going, he came flying over there to protect his brother. And you know they have that.
What
relationship.
Do you mean his brother? No, they didn't play together. Oh, we had Matt Collins for 1 year.
Oh, they didn't play together.
No.
Oh
no, they yeah, that was they were. We lost Diggs to. Two or three years ago now, I can't remember.
But they play together now.
Right, right. But it was still fun to see two Bills players there. And that changed the momentum for the Patriots for a little bit. And
I don't think it's fun to see that. Like, I look at those guys and I'm like, more Diggs. I mean, you got to love Diggs for doing Diggs. But, like, guys that go on other teams, like, it makes me like them less just – out of spite.
Well, Diggs is also, it's like an ex-boyfriend. I can't even look at him.
Exactly. you can say that. I don't know. I don't have a version of that. Like,
neither does
Lucy. I don't have an ex-boyfriend either.
Lucy's never had an ex-boyfriend either.
You know what funny part is? Jake, different than me, saying if there's a guy that's a Bill and now he's on another team, who's that? What is that?
That's someone calling.
It's Jake's phone.
Is that my phone?
No,
it's Jake's
no.
phone.
It's not your phone.
It is. I'm going to answer it just because I want to see.
It's a caller.
It's a caller, but I think it's spam.
A caller? Put him on. We can't put him on?
Because we have a crazy number, it could be a spam call.
No.
Dad, there is a difference between like we let go of a player and they get picked up. I still like them, but Diggs is different because he wanted out.
Yeah.
Good point, but I just want you to know when Doug Flutie went, we would cheer for that team.
Right.
What Lucy's saying is very specific. There's guys, and Mac is one of those guys that like you either get so good that we can't afford you and like you were on your rookie contract and like you turned into an all-star and like we can't afford you and you go on and we root for you. And I remember when that happened to, guys like Willis McGahee back in the day when we drafted him, even though I don't even think he went on to, anyways, but I get what you're saying. Yeah. Flutie. Who else went on?
There's a lot of players that you would, that if they leave, but like Mac, I don't think he would have wanted to leave the Bills. I think he wanted to stay and be a Buffalo Bill.
Now we just got to move up. The pressure on Bean right now to land a number one receiver, whether it's in the trade now that like the new season's opened up today, or in the draft. Like it's the pressure's on now more than ever.
I feel bad for Keon Coleman based on what they did at that press conference.
I still have faith in him.
Yeah.
He brushed it off.
Oh, Pegula like called him out like as if he's like, well, basically.
Hold on, this is what happened. A reporter said to Bean, like addressed the wide receiver issue. He didn't say any names or anything. He just said something about wide receivers, and then Pegula stopped. He said, "May I interrupt?" He said, "I want to address the issue on Keon Coleman. That was a coaching staff decision that Bean was just being a team player about," or something along those lines. And that was really all he said. And so like he called out Keon for no reason and then blamed the coaches. But like then there's receipts of like Bean always like talking about Keon and how much he wants him in the draft and things like that. like video, like from like embedded episodes. So like, who really knows? But that was, you don't, as an owner, you don't do that. You don't call out players. You don't make people like that. Shows a lot of. I lost faith in ownership, and I don't think Kim Pegula would have ever let that happen.
Never.
I think when Kim Pegula with what happened to her and you know, I feel so horrible for her and her family and like for our team, because she was like the backbone, that she was the president, and she took care of a lot of those business decisions, and she could read people. She knew how to pick the right people, and she, I don't know. I don't feel amazing about the decisions that were made, but I got to live with it.
Booby, after that press conference, other NFL players were really angry that weren't on our team, saying somebody check on Keon, because it just looked bad. It was like, well, blaming him.
I just want to say, I think Keon Coleman could be a really great receiver, but I think he doesn't put energy in, because with his size and talent, but I don't think he breaks his ass. No,
I think
open,
he will. I think this will
open.
Put a fire under him.
What?
I think this will put a fire under him, and I think if not this season, then he's a bust. But I think this will be his season.
My theory on Keon Coleman is that he's not a work ethic thing necessarily. Even though he was like maybe like penalized for that, I could be wrong. I don't think he has the speed, right? Like, so he just doesn't have the speed, so he does have to work harder to find other ways to get open, because he doesn't have separation.
They hired him,
I guess you can call it. They drafted him as a one-on-one guy that can jump and beat the other guy, who's not going to get separation, who's just going to get that jump ball because he's a basketball player and he knows how to jump.
Right.
They're not using him like that, and I don't know what happened, so we'll see.
So here's the deal, kids. Enough football, it's over. But Jake and I are Sabre fans, and at least they're in it. They're in it, right, Jake?
Oh, no, they're in an amazing spot. If you look at all their numbers in the past 2 months, it's crazy, because the success they had was matched by like two other teams over the stretch, like 20, you know, six losses over like a 30 game stretch. I think it was also Tampa Bay and Detroit. We're sitting good. For them not to make the playoffs, they would have to go into a plummet.
Not true.
They're 7 points a cushion right now.
In the playoffs, there's so many teams, it looks like, with the basically the same or close points that they have.
No, you're right. However, the wild card spot that is there, which we're in, I guess we're five points, yeah. I guess it's changed a bit since the last time I looked. 5 points, but still, the way they've been playing, they have to continue the way they're playing, and they could lose a few more games, but as long as they just keep winning threes, the chunks of threes and fours.
Unfortunately, a lot of people don't like to talk about hockey, but let me just mention to close the show. Bubby, I was just thinking today.
What?
I'm cutting back on poker. I can't take it.
You guys, he says this every once in a while, he'll say this, and then it doesn't happen.
I can't take it.
Sometimes he comes home and goes, I'm quitting. I'm not playing anymore.
Can't take it.
I know.
When I see the miraculous bad beats today, this kid, it's just, it's brutal.
It's a bad run of luck. You'll get your good run. It goes in waves.
I'm not even talking about just me.
Yeah.
This kid sitting across from me who had a huge stack when there were only like 14 people left out of 69 pocket aces. And this guy who I hated all day, I knew when he was bullshitting. The kid had a all in, and he was, the guy caught runner, runner, two, the two last cars.
Yeah.
That made it straight. Otherwise, it's ridiculous.
So you stopped hockey talk because you thought people don't like to hear about hockey, and then we've talked poker.
Right. Let me learn.
I'm kidding. I'm joking. You. Okay. I'm just messing. Hockey, I'm messing with you, Bo.
Hockey was 5 minutes, 1 minute I'm poker. We're out.
I
was
No.
I was being.
Jake has something.
I'm curious because an idea that I've been floating around in my head, and this is a thing, and I want to know what the audience thinks, but I want to set up a way where we can live stream or record you playing poker and seeing your hand.
You can't.
What do you mean you can't?
Can't.
Because casinos have rules. I tried to take a photo one time at Del Lago and I got in trouble.
I don't know. It's a little hidden camera.
Oh, we get those glasses, those meta glasses.
No, but people live stream gambling. How is it in some?
That gambling is TV gambling.
No.
Yes,
There's a place online where you can live stream gambling.
True.
They're playing poker in their kitchen.
Those games are house games. I see them all. What you call house game?
Oh,
you can't do it at the casino.
Like underground games, kind
well,
of.
Well, let's get you yeah, add some house games. Let's get some house games sponsored. Unless that's illegal.
We could do that in Rochester,
right?
We could do that in Rochester. We don't need a sponsor, but we could go to a house game. No, we can
legally.
I mean, we can live stream. I mean, at a house game is what I'm saying.
No, I don't think it's. We can't gamble. You can't gamble.
People don't want to see me playing fucking.
I know,
poker.
Who's gonna watch Dad play poker? When
I don't know. There's a huge people. There's a ton of. I would people watch people play poker. They live. People play video games.
We could live stream.
A huge community of people that watch people do things. Right.
But if you want to watch poker, watch the TV poker.
We could.
But that's all this guy does. So who? Tell me the fans aren't interested in seeing what this guy's doing for 6 hours out of his day every single
every day.
I think it would be better to watch Dad on his morning walk, looking
what
at the iguanas.
No. She thinks it'll be better to watch your morning routine of walking, working out.
But you can't see. I guess
that
if
is
we're,
a good
looking
one.
At, if we're looking
Thank
at what
you.
He's looking at, we're seeing his eyes, I guess meta glasses or something like that could be
interesting. Oh, with Dad wearing the meta glasses?
Well, that's what would the
we're staring at his shaking hand and
the
all
poker
his cards.
Thing would be we would see his cards and then we would see we would be in his seat
and you
basically,
get to
be
hear him.
By the way, I wouldn't want people.
Tell the story how you got in trouble. Tell how you got in trouble at poker. With the cards and the chips, and you push the chips.
I don't even want to talk.
It's a great
about
story. He got in trouble. They had to call the pit boss.
The funny thing was, for the few poker people.
People will love this because I said you needed John
for the
Kruger
few.
There.
Dude, you have to stop. It's not the few poker people. If you care about it, they care about it. Okay.
And everybody.
Okay.
Everybody poker.
If that's
or not
true, then why are they listening to you talk?
Well, not for that.
Poker or not, they're going to love, people love when you get in trouble.
Okay. I want to hear about you getting in trouble.
All right. I'm at the casino and I was bluffing and I bet $3,000 and it went around and that kid there went all in for everything. And I thought because I'm deaf, I didn't hear him go all in.
Okay.
So I thought what happens in poker, and all poker players know this, people will go, how much do you have behind? So I took my...
And that means how much is in your stack besides what you already put in your bet. So your bet's here, and how much is behind you that you still have in your stack.
True. So I pushed it out so he could see it. Not anywhere near...
The other.
Where I put the $3,000. Right? And the bitch, and I saw her today.
He was calling her way more names than bitch.
And I saw her today.
Oh, you did?
She says, hi, Alan. They don't know. Nobody knows. I bet I'm Alan. Hi.
So tell him what happened.
Anyway, she says, you're in. I'm in. I don't even have a pair.
And he was bluffing, so he knew he didn't want to be
And the funny part is, two dudes sitting next to me said he was just showing
the
kid. No, that's out there. So obviously that was it. I'm out because I lose. But here's the funny thing.
Say how she had to call over the people.
Oh, yeah. I'm bitching, and she calls, they call it the house. House. And the management comes over. They tell the story, and they have the final word, and they say, your chips are in. Here's the funny part of this story. I'm out. The next day, I'm in a tournament at the Hard Rock.
A whole different casino.
Big, that's the Mecca. Same, I did the same thing. And they didn't say shit.
And you said other people had done it at that, and nobody got...
Nobody said shit. There, listen, they don't care.
Listen. Are you done with... That's the story, or you guys are a punchline?
That was the story.
See what I'm saying?
Okay.
Sucks.
Well, I like it.
No, it's a phenomenal story. All I want to say is, just... You don't have to care about poker to care to think that story is interesting. The story happened to you. It's an experience that you had. Like every story you tell, if we don't care about what you were doing, we don't not care about the story anymore. It's like if you tell us a story about how you were in your car and you got into a road rage situation, and like, I don't like road rage, so this story means nothing to me. it's you telling the story. It's your experience. That's what people want to hear, regardless of the topic of what it is.
We're running long, but I have a car story.
Oh, God.
I do.
For all our car people, please tune out here.
No, this is a car. This is a quickie. I wrote the note.
What?
I'm on Oakland. No, I'm on a big street coming home from the casino. And traffic is terrible down here.
Yeah.
Terrible. And a guy in the car next to me looks at me. Let me see what he said. Oh, he goes, hey, Bobby. I go, I'm not Bobby. And he goes, wait a minute. I wrote down the notes. Oh, so the guy looks at me. And he goes, I'm not kidding you. This is true. Hey, Bobby. I go, I ain't Bobby. And you know what he says next? There's two things in this world, hookers and cocaine. Well, I've done both. And he said, and he goes, and still do. But here's the funniest part to me. He goes, I still do. And he goes, and I just turned 50. The fucking guy looked 80 all day. Teeth all fucked up. The guy was so terrible looking.
Good commercial did not do.
And he was saying, and I'm 50. Try to think he looks good. I go, holy shit, yeah, bro, you good. And then when the light turned, I had to get away. That's true.
I'm dying to know why he called you Bobby.
He thought I was Bobby.
You know how we were talking about...
I mean, could he have said Buddy?
Oh, yeah, maybe he said Buddy.
Maybe he did say Buddy.
So we were talking about... We could live stream you taking a poop on the fancy toilet.
Oh, my God.
Let's go. Let's no. get the fuck out of here.
It's time to go.
Lucy, what?
I think that would be interesting.
Mom.
He sits there.
Lucy,
Mom.
Lucy, save whatever's left. All right, kids. This show brought to you by our, did we already tell them?
Nope.
Clark Peshkin, family law, divorce. But right now you might need, everyone's going to die, and you all think a will is a big deal. Estate planning, take it, Bubby.
Just sign up. For the free classes, they'll work with you, teach you everything that you need to know, and designate formulate a plan just for you. And you can sign up for free at clarkbeshkin.com/Wheeze or at the Wheeze Family Circus website. There's a link there. And if you see a QR code on the screen, you can use that to sign up.
But this is important. We went to the seminar. I didn't understand it.
But
Booby did, yeah. And now we have an estate plan.
Even you started to understand. They manage a way to make it so that everybody could understand, because even you were understanding the importance and the plan that they had for us.
And like, even for like someone like me who, like, I'm
you could 38. Die.
No, I know. Like, I should, like, even people my age, I don't have one. I need to.
Because you own a home.
I own a house. And, like, as soon as they became a sponsor and I started thinking about it, I was like, wow, actually, like, I am the perfect candidate for this. Even though they say a lot of their people are older, but that's only because people think that they have to be older for this to matter. But that's not true, because, like, we can all die at any moment. Like, literally, like, don't tell me you guys all aren't thinking about that. If you don't think about that, you're crazy.
Let me tell you this. This is a podcast. I can say anything, right?
Right.
You know, I started getting high in high school. And in Vietnam.
How did we get here?
And in Vietnam, we all smoked a lot of herb.
Right.
Even in the jungle. But if you're looking for the legal stuff without the runaround, Mikey Amalfi's got a dynamite joint, and it's just around the corner. Around the corner, Canna Corner. Makes it easy to shop the way you want, online or in-store. It's right next door to Savoia Bakery on Clifford, just off 590 at the Empire Boulevard exit. Convenient. And inside, it's beautiful. Everything you've ever wanted to do legally to maybe get
it. It is nice. It's like going into a fancy jewelry store to go pick out. And for someone like me who didn't smoke all those years in school.
Still doesn't.
But now they have gummies, and it helps me sleep. At times when you need something to give you a little help, they have a lot of options there.
And you can go online and, like, pre-order stuff and, like, have it ready when you get there, like, in-store pickup. It's kind of cool.
What's the website then?
I think it's cannabiscornerny.com.
That's it, kids. We're out of here. It's nice to be important.
But it's more important to be nice.
Hey, love you. Love you. Oh, my God, kids, we just got off the phone with Woody from prison. You're going to hear the whole story from his lips in a bonus episode coming next.